When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hail, you heroes, hawks, heralds, crows, pirates, and wardens. Welcome to the Dragon Age Lorecast, where we unpack, discuss, and galaxy brain about all the lore behind the Dragon Age series.
We are so excited to bring you this podcast. Every episode, we'll be talking about a different topic in the Dragon Age universe, from character deep dives to exalted marches and elven gods. We will cover it all.
There will be spoilers. And always remember, swooping is bad.
Hello and welcome to the Dragon Age Lorecast. I am one of your hosts, Austin, also known as Teacup, and we're here to talk about Dragon Age. But before we do that, I want to introduce you, or not introduce you, but I'm here with my co-host.
Yeah, I'm Shelby or SheCup.
Yeah, and today we are here for a character deep dive, which I am very excited about because we haven't done one in a while.
Yeah, we haven't. I know when we started the podcast way back in 2021, we did like one character deep dive every month. After every patron chat, we would do a character deep dive. And quite frankly, we do not have enough companions to continue that pattern. So we've been doing them a little bit more infrequently. And I think that we did... maybe last season or the season before, we did our first character deep dive on a non-companion main character in the form of Plymouth. And so today we are also doing another non-companion character deep dive. And this one is a actually really, really important character to the lore who is very missable. And I think you can interact with her at least once or twice in the main quest line of Inquisition. But other than that, you really can just skip over and completely miss her other lore implications. So if you haven't already guessed or didn't look at the title, we are indeed discussing Grand Enchanter and Grey Warden Fiona, neither of which title is accurate for her anymore if she is alive in your playthrough.
Yeah, that's true. I guess we meet her with a bunch of titles and then bye-bye.
Yeah, I mean, and even when we meet her, the titles are not accurate anymore, but it just kind of is what it is. So before we just dive into the fun facts, do you have any preliminary thoughts about Fiona?
Just that I don't really like, I've obviously been exposed to her in the little bit of the calling that I've read. But other than that, like, not a lot to know about her other than like what I can find out in Inquisition with the siding with the mages. And so I don't necessarily have a lot of like preliminary thoughts other than like, she didn't really stand out to me as a character when I first played through Inquisition.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think she doesn't stand out. And I'm not sure if that's intentional, but she's very unremarkable, I think, and maybe even annoying. Some people I know in the fandom definitely find her a little bit frustrating of a character in Inquisition for various reasons. So I agree with you. I have or had similar thoughts, at least before I read The Calling. But before we get into all of that, let's just jump into the fun facts. So first and foremost, this is pretty basic, and you'll know this if you've read The Calling, but Fiona is the very first warden we know of who will not have to undertake The Calling. And we will talk more about this later, but there is potentially one more warden that this that may fall into this category, depending on if they are successful or not. And that is the Hero of Ferelden. If they have survived into Dragon Age Inquisition, they are looking for a cure. So they have that in common. Now, my next fun fact is actually about Duncan, and this is that Duncan named an axe after Fiona, the character, and you can actually get this item in Dragon Age 2 via the Rogue Item Pack number 2. And in the very same pack, you can also get a special longbow named Longbow of the Avars. Its description is a letter found on the body of a courier who was killed by bandits in the Anderfells in 920 Dragon. And this letter mentions Fiona. It's basically referencing comments that she made about a dwarven fortress in the Deep Roads that they explored during the calling, the book. And the writer of this letter suspects that the bow originally belonged to Kel'ap Morgan, who was an Avar and who was a member of their party in the novel. But this is not written by Fiona. It just mentions her. So I thought I would bring it as a fun fact.
Now, another thing we need to talk about, I put this in the fun facts because I really didn't know where else to put it. But we do have a major appearance discrepancy when it comes to Fiona in the calling versus her appearance in Dragon Age Inquisition. And so in the calling, she is described as having brown and dark eyes, while in Dragon Age Inquisition, she has very bright green eyes. So this is a pretty big difference. And something else that I think I should bring up is that some people do claim that Fiona was whitewashed in Inquisition. Now, let me get this out of the way, not to defend BioWare, because I am not a BioWare defender. However, this is one area where I don't actually think they've done much wrong, because the calling consistently describes her with pale skin. Now, you absolutely can headcanon and picture her however you want to, but I do personally think her skin tone, at least, is consistent in DAI with the calling. Now, her eye color, absolutely, they flubbed that one, but I do think her skin tone is consistent. And we can have conversations about that, absolutely. You can hop in our Discord if you want to talk about it more. And I know that BioWare has whitewashed a lot of characters, but I don't think this is one that we should include.
I don't remember. And like, maybe it was just because I had played DAI before reading the little bit of the calling that I have read. So I had like my picture of Fiona was the one in DAI. But yeah, I don't remember her being described as having even just like light brown skin, or I do remember it being described as pale.
Yeah, and I do think, I mean, for me personally, I think the bigger issue in Fiona's portrayal in Dragon Age Inquisition is her personality change, not her appearance change, which we'll talk about later. But let's just move it along a little bit to my last fun fact, which is that in Inquisition, she is referred to and technically has the title of Grand Enchanter, because that's how she's referred to. But she doesn't wear the robes, and she's not a Grand Enchanter anymore, because the role doesn't exist due to the Mage Templar War.
Now that I think about it, do we ever meet the Grand Enchanter in any of the games? We meet a lot of first enchanters.
Isn't Vivian a Grand Enchanter?
I think by technicality, yes, because she's the only first enchanter to remain after the mages disband.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. So I don't think we actually do meet any, because I just looked it up. And there are only a few that we even know of. And the ones, Fiona and Vivian, are really the only ones that we, like, are common characters that are on the list. So, no is the answer to your question. Also, I just need to say,
Every single week, I do my research for this show, and I have pages and pages and pages of notes, and I try to figure out every single fun fact, every single little trivia thing, every single kind of discrepancy or random side topic of conversation. I try to be educated about so that we can have conversations about it. And every damn week you come up in here with some question that is, to be fair, tangentially related usually, that I do not know the answer to.
You know, I've always been this way.
I know. I just want to make it known. In our little intro before and after the break, We have the different sounds every week, every season they change. This season is one featuring Solas, where somebody says something about him. I don't remember what they say specifically. And Solas goes, "Yes, I have been known to do that." And that's what I feel like you should say right now.
Yes, I have been known to do that.
Okay. Okay, well, let's just get into the actual content of Fiona. But before we do, I do feel like we need to issue a trigger warning for abuse, and specifically sexual and physical abuse of a child. This is part of Fiona's story. And so if this is a trigger or something uncomfortable for you to listen to, please make sure you do what you need to do to take care of yourself. So, as you know, Fiona is an elf, and so we're going to get into her childhood here just a few seconds, but, you know, we know that elves are mistreated in Thedas. Fiona is not an exception to this. And so we know that in her youngest childhood, she was raised in an alienage in Orlais with her parents. It's assumed that her mother died at some point, because we just know that when her father died too, she was then orphaned. But we're not really sure how her mother died, if it was in childbirth or something else. We're not really sure. We don't get all of those details. But regardless, as a result of being orphaned and the elves' extreme poverty and just general oppression of elves, Fiona is basically forced to stay with a group of men who are slave owners and traffickers. And she is 7 years old. This is very shortly after the death of her father. And as you can probably imagine, these men do attempt to and succeed at trafficking Fiona herself. And these slavers sell her to a man named Comte Dorian. He is an Orlesian nobleman. We have not heard anything about him since. We have no idea any more of his story. And I do want to make a note that this is not Dorian Pavus. This is a different Dorian. I know, easy to get confused, but this is not Dorian Pavus. This is another one. So, basically, what Comte Dorian was doing is he was looking for a slave that he could use as his own, like, personal slave who would serve him sexually, who he could rape and abuse. He would then refer to this person as his pet. And so this is the man that traffics Fiona, and this is what she has to do to stay alive. He does sexually and physically abuse her for 7 years, which is, at this point, half of her life. I know this is really, really hard subject matter to hear, but Fiona, when she's 14, she does try to escape, and the Comte heard about this escape attempt, and he began to whip her as a punishment. Well, it just so happened at this moment was when her magic manifested for the very first time. And so her magic manifests and she kills Comte Dorian. And so the interesting part of this story is that the slave owner's widow, then by that point, she steps in. And she basically, like, helps Fiona escape, which then obviously prevents her from being captured by the city guard or left for dead. And so the Comtesse sends her to the Circle of Magi outside of Montsimard. So Fiona kills her owner, Comte Dorian, her owner, her abuser, by accident, really, because of her magic is manifesting. And his wife, after he's dead, helps her escape. So you can imagine, if all of these other horrible things didn't convince you what a piece of shit this guy is, the fact that his widow is helping his murderer to escape should also give you another clue. Like, this is a bad person. And so this is 7 years of Fiona's life, is living, serving, being abused by this man. And so I think we really, really, really have to consider this childhood trauma and abuse when we consider her actions later in life. So keep this in your mind. Remember that this is a major, major, major part of her story.
I just have so much, because I know it happened, but a 7-year-old, like, despicable human being. Despicable.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I absolutely agree that this is like the worst of humanity, for sure. But I mean, these people exist. Like,
I know.
We could get into the weeds here. I don't want us to get into the weeds here. But all I want to say is that people who do this kind of thing, I hope they get the same treatment as Comte Dorian.
Yes, I agree with that 100%, 100% behind this. But I do want to put this in the side of your mind, because I have a theory about Fiona's. I now have a theory about Fiona's personality change in DAI that I want to talk about. Mm-hmm. But when we get there, we can do that.
So back to the timeline, the Comtesse sends Fiona to the Circle at Montsimard. Which, yes, it is the same one that Vivian is at. So they also then know each other. Anyway, so this happens when Fiona's 14. And we do know that Fiona would come to despise the circles, especially a little bit later in life, because she eventually becomes the leader of the Mage Templar, of the Mage faction during the Mage Templar War. And we also know that she once saw the Grey Wardens as her way out of the circles, but she ends up back at the circle, and we'll talk about why later. But she does beg Commander Genevieve to let her join the Wardens originally, and she was successful. And so that's kind of how she gets to where she is in the calling book. So before we get into the calling, I think we can take a little bit of a mid break and come back.
All right. Well, let's do that.
So you like to read? What's wrong with that?
It's frivolous. There are more important things for me to do.
That's just her favorite.
Nobody asked you, Tevinter.
I couldn't finish the last one you lent me. I actually feel dumber for having tried.
It's literature. Smutty literature. Whatever you do, don't tell Varric.
No offense, but might I try? I've got a quick hand, after all. Ha, let's see. Oh, when was the last time I slipped my hand into some dark hole? I remember a long story, that.
You hurt my head sometimes, Solas.
Yes, I have been known to do that.
So, welcome to the middle of the show, where we take some time to thank our patrons. Thank you so much to our patrons, especially our first patrons, Genesis and Lisa M. Join our Patreon if you want to, if you can. If you want to hear your name read out on the show, you can join at any tier, and we'll read it out on the week that you join or a week near when you join. If you want your name read out on every episode of the show, you can sign up at our Divine tier or the Nug King tier and get your name read out on every show. Also, if you sign up, you get exclusive Dragon Age Lorecast merch. So as Shelby said in here, don't be a square. Sign up and get your DAL merch if you want to. But also, you can find that at patreon.com/DALorecast. If you can't support us there, another great way is to leave us ratings and reviews on Apple or Spotify. If you leave us some kind words and a 5-star review, we will read out your comment or question or review on a future episode of the show. We don't have any to read today, so if you haven't done that or you have a question about an episode, go log into Spotify or Apple, leave us a review. 5 stars, and we'll read it out on a future episode of the show. And then lastly, you can join our Discord, where you can come and hang out with us and talk to us about Dragon Age, about a bunch of stuff. It's a great place to hang out and be on the internet. And if you want to come and do that, you can. It's also where you will get all information about the podcast. It goes to Discord first. That's where we say everything. So if you want to stay up to date, join the Discord, like with our new merch store, which you can find at cupspodcasting.com. So yeah, I think that's all I have for the middle of the show.
Yeah, so let's get back into it.
Abominations are always so awkward at family reunions. Have you ever seen an abomination? They are ugly.
Dorian, those words you say, what do they mean?
What, you mean like mendicant? Ultimatum?
No arse when you're mad. Vishanti Kofas. You're swearing, I know it.
Vishanta Kofas. It's Tavine, relics of the old tongue. We still use the colourful phrases.
And it means what?
Literally, you shit on my tongue.
You fear barbarians will swoop down upon you.
Yes, swooping is bad.
Okay, so let's talk about the novels really quickly before we get into Inquisition. Because if we only talk about Inquisition, we're not going to have much to talk about. Because I think The Calling and Asunder really, really, really give so much depth and backstory to who Fiona is. So in The Calling, she appears as one of the Grey Wardens under Commander Genevieve's leadership. And she is pretty young here. I don't think we get an exact age, but she's pretty young. And the party does rely on her for healing and offensive magic both. We'll talk a little bit more about the specific plot points of this story in season 8. So I'm just going to give kind of a broad overview today. But Fiona is a fairly minor character in the story, though she does, like, she is the vehicle for which a lot of things happen. But I think the most important part of this, of Fiona's involvement in The Calling, is that she develops two very, very important relationships. First is with Duncan. They become very close friends during this book, primarily because I think they're able to bond over kind of like being the youngest two in the party. They have some commonalities. They're both orphans. They both grew up on the streets, like, you know, similar things there. And they often shared secrets. And I can imagine, you know, despite the fact that Duncan's human, they probably share a lot of life experiences. And we know from the fun facts that Duncan's friendship with Fiona is something that really does stay with him throughout his life, since he names an entire axe after her. And now the second very important relationship that develops is with King Merrick Theron. As you may know, they do begin a romantic relationship, though the story does not start out this way. Their initial relationship is pretty uncomfortable and even intense because Fiona, obviously, given her backstory, is extremely distrustful of nobility and of humans. However, throughout the book, she does warm up to him and they eventually become lovers. Months after the end of the initial, like, going into the deep roads, Fiona and Duncan travel to Denerim to meet with King Merrick. Fiona brings and reveals the existence of her and Merrick's child. And so she brings this child to Merrick. And she makes him promise that his son would be told that his mother was a human and had died. And so Duncan also makes a promise to watch over this child throughout his life. And as you may know, this child is indeed Alistair Theron. And so they do this. It should be also said that I think The Calling and Stolen Throne are written simultaneously during the development of Dragon Age Origins. And so this kind of plot line of like, oh, lied to my son for me, is done because there is a plot line in Origins where Alistair goes and meets his mother, who treats him, or his sister rather, to tell him about his mother, and she treats him terribly. You can make the assumption that that's because she knows that she's not really his sister. So Alistair, unfortunately, does not know this yet. So that's kind of what happens in The Calling. But we would be remiss if we didn't mention that one very, very important part of The Calling, which is that at the end, we learn that Fiona has been cured of the Darkspawn taint. The speculation is that this is due to her pregnancy, that the pregnancy kind of cured her in some unknown way. We will get into a little bit more about this as we discuss Asunder, but first I wanted to see if you had any questions or comments or things to add so far.
I definitely get Fiona's reasoning for wanting to hide who she is from Alistair, mainly because like we look at what happens to Michelle Day, what's his last name? When we look at what happens to him in Masked Empire, but like when it's revealed that he is a half elf and it messes with his society. And so I could see Fiona being like, don't tell him, like, let him believe that he's fully human so that he doesn't. I totally get that. I don't fault her for that. But at this point, especially if Alistair is king, do you think he knows? Does Fiona give any hint that he knows who she is in Inquisition?
I do think it remains unclear, and we'll get into that a little bit more later as we talk about the quotes, but I think it remains unclear. I would imagine that Arl Teagan knows. Like, he has to know because he takes care of Alistair as a child. So I would imagine that Teagan then also knows. So I think between the two of them, if Alistair's king, I just feel like one of the two of them would tell him. And I also feel like it's very statistically unlikely that zero servants saw Fiona and Duncan come into the palace bringing a baby in a basket to the king, and they don't figure it out, and B, don't tell anyone for 20, 30 years. I find that very statistically unlikely because, you know, generally people who are servants in a palace, like, they're going to want to keep that position because it's secure, because it's, you know, an honor, because you're like the best servant ever if you can get a position in the palace. So I would imagine a lot of those servants are also, they have long tenures, that they're there for a long time. So they would know some of these things when Alistair comes to the throne. So I think he probably has figured it out. But it remains unclear canonically.
Yeah, I think you're right that both either Eamon or Teagan know, because I would feel like Duncan would tell one of them. And we know that Eamon is not beyond keeping a secret about Alistair's identity, because he keeps one from Isolde.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that with that, I think Duncan would have eventually told Alistair when he was older and ready, especially if Duncan survived Origins. When Alistair finally becomes king, I think Duncan would have told him. But mm-hmm.
Yeah, especially given Duncan's relationship is stronger with Fiona than Merrick it ever was. So I agree with you. I think Duncan for sure would have told him. But we're a little bit in the weeds, so let's get into Asunder real quick. So Asunder is very interesting. And this is incorrect. So Asunder takes place a little bit later than The Calling, quite a few years later. But we learn in that book that Fiona has been removed from membership in the Order of the Grey Wardens. We don't get a ton of details as to why in this book, but in Inquisition, you can talk with her about it a little bit. And basically, she says that she was made to leave after everybody realized she had been cured of the taint. She refused to undertake the joining again. And this was kind of like the last straw that it took for the order to be like, no, you cannot stay here. You have to leave now. I think there's a lot of jealousy there. I'm sure there are a lot of people that are like, well, why does she get to be cured from the darkspawn taint, but none of the rest of us do? Like, the blight's over, you know, kind of thing. But regardless, you know, there's lots of stuff with that. So they kick her out, and there is a little bit of a gap of time between the realization that she had been cured and her removal. She says that there was significant animosity towards her from her fellow wardens, which I definitely do. I understand why they would be pissed off. So eventually Fiona realizes that she could do more good in the circles. And so she returned to the Montsimard Circle, where she quickly rose through the ranks to first enchanter and then grand enchanter. And she did rise through the ranks fairly quickly due to her support, vocal support, for greater mage freedom. And so that's really where we see her in Asunder. This is where we're picking up the story. And again, like The Calling, her role in this book is fairly minimal, but she has a huge impact on like the lore of Thedas. And so just to sum it up quickly, Fiona calls for a vote on whether or not to separate the circles from the chantry. Wynn successfully convinces the circles to err on the side of caution and not break away. However, the Templars and Lord Seeker Asshole don't care about the results of the vote, and they disband the College of Enchanters entirely, regardless of the outcome. A year later, Divine Justinia V arranges a new conclave to investigate the Rite of Tranquility and negotiate peace between the Templars and mages. Fiona was indeed present at this conclave. However, her and her fraternity, the Libertarians, riled up tensions enough that the Templars and Lambert called the entire conclave to be in treason before any vote could even occur. A swift battle ensues, and then Fiona and several first enchanters were captured, and they escape, and all the things happen. But eventually, the mages collectively gather at Andoral's Reach, and this is when Fiona officially calls for separation, succeeds, thereby officially initiating the Mage Templar War. And that's like one of the very final things that happen in this book.
Right. And so, like, I think Inquisition does a bad job of, like, I think they just are relying on people who have played Dragon Age 2 to sympathize with the mages, because we saw what Meredith did, and we know, like, oh yeah, mages are really oppressed under this system, which I think works in and of itself. But this kind of, like, I wish we could have been presented with these facts in game, because it makes a more compelling argument against Vivian's argument. Vivian's whole argument against separation is it looks like the mages are condoning attacks on the divine and violence and all of this, which I see Vivian's side of this, but it's not like they're not trying. I mean, they are trying to do things the right way, and it seems like, you know, calmer heads are prevailing. But then, because of his own paranoia and other things that are going on during Asunder, Lambert decides to be an asshole.
Yeah, and I mean, that's why I call him Lord Seeker Asshole. But there's a lot that goes on, and be aware, this is a very, very, very bare bones summary. I think it's fair to say a lot of this is due to Lambert's own paranoia, but also at the same time, I mean, he really puts them in like really bad conditions. And so I think that if Lambert had not come to this circle, I think it probably the war would not have been as bad. Like a lot of the circles would have just continued on as they were, but he, along with Anders, are kind of the spark of this rebellion. And Fiona, as we've said, she's tried multiple times to get them to vote for this. And it's just at this perfect time that she finally does succeed.
Right. And like, it is noted to say that there are two like rites of annulment that are enacted before the mages do that, which in Kirkwall and then the one in Ravain.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, that's another factor. And we've talked about all of this on our Mage Templar War episode. So if you haven't listened to that one, go check it out. But now let's talk about Inquisition. So at the beginning of Inquisition, we are told that Divine Justinia V has finally convinced the rebel mages and the Templars to convene again in hopes of establishing true peace. Fiona is, of course, invited to this as the Grand Enchanter, but she sends intermediaries in her place. The new Lord Seeker, Lucius, does the same. Even though Fiona technically begins the war, she does want to find a solution for peace. She is not just fighting to fight. I think there are perhaps some Templars who are just fighting to fight. Fiona wants the war to end. However, unfortunately, we know that this doesn't really happen. Instead, the breach happens and people die and lots of more people scatter, and it's frankly a mess. So Fiona leads her followers to Ferelden, where the king or queen or king and queen give them refuge in Redcliffe. When you play Inquisition, you encounter her in the marketplace in Valrio right after the Chantry denounces you as the Herald of Andraste. She asks you to come to the Gull and Lantern Tavern in Redcliffe to discuss an alliance. When you arrive, inexplicably, she does not recognize you, nor does she remember inviting you or planning for an alliance at all. This is because there's some time magic occurring, and Fiona is at the behest of Magister Garion Alexius of Teventer. Ultimately, when you do talk with Fiona, she reveals that her people's annihilation was her primary fear, and so she had ended up relinquishing her role as Grand Enchanter after trading the Rebel Mage's services to the Teventer Imperium in desperation. Which means that Alexius is now the leader of the rebel mages and has conscripted them for 10 years under his service before they can officially become legitimate Teventer citizens. To Fiona's dismay, Alexius reveals that he actually intends to change the terms of this agreement and conscript all of the rebel mages into military service under his command. So it's really a mess. And at this point in time, you can either recruit the mages or the Templars. Unfortunately, you can't do both. There are a few differences in Fiona's story depending on what you choose. So let's just go through them quickly. If the Templars are recruited, Fiona and the mages join the Venatori out of desperation and attack Haven. You kill her. If the mages are recruited, Fiona survives and takes residence in Skyhold. During the time magic scene, she's been imprisoned and turned into a living Red Lyrium mine. If mages are recruited as full allies and Liliana or Cassandra become divine, Fiona reforms the College of Enchanters as a new order to teach young mages. If mages are conscripted and Cass is divine, Fiona and her followers return to the reinstated circles peacefully. She creates a new order named the Bright Hand, advocating for more reforms. They keep very close ties with the Inquisition, which becomes the dominant voice in circle politics. Here is where it differs drastically. If Vivian is divine, Fiona and the mages refuse her invitation to rejoin the Circle of Magi and instead reform the College of Enchanters as a new and separate order. Vivian then begins a war to put them down, and she does win. Some die, some go to the circles, and some go back to the Inquisition. Let's take a pause here. I know we still have more things to discuss, but what are your thoughts about Fiona in Inquisition?
Like I said at the beginning of the episode, Fiona didn't strike me as anything like special in Inquisition. You can talk to her and learn that she's like Alistair's mother and talk about all of those things. But once you recruit her and do the mage kind of slide, there's not a lot to interact with her outside of maybe a couple war table operations. Which I was kind of disappointed again. I kind of wanted more from like whichever side you recruit, either like cutscenes or more involvement of what was going on. I have heard that their personalities are very different from Asunder, the Calling, and her presentation in Dragon Age Inquisition. I was just thinking about this, and one thing that came up after hearing her whole story and everything is, does Fiona present a case for a possibly very mild case of dissociative identity disorder? Which, if you are not in the psychology world, that is the official name for what you may know as multiple personality disorder. And basically, what is this disorder or is set on by extreme and gruesome trauma. Very extreme. The kind of trauma that Fiona goes through in her early life is a common like trigger or onset for this disorder, especially if it occurs at a young age. And 7 years old is a very, very young age. And what happens is these multiple personalities or these personalities kind of take over as a like protection of the core personality. And then they can be very varied and all of that thing. But I wonder if like your thoughts on could Fiona's personality change be that like the Fiona we meet in Inquisition is the actual Fiona. And the ones that we had been experiencing in the books are more of these protective personalities.
I think this is a really interesting theory. And I don't necessarily want to say no or yes to it, because I think there are just some things to talk about. So I think first and foremost, you're absolutely right that this disorder does come on, and there is a higher percentage of people who have this disorder and people who were sexually abused as children. Like, there is a significant correlation there. And so right off the bat, something to consider, because this is part of Fiona's story. Absolutely. Secondly, I don't think it's completely out of left field. I think that there is some merit to this, because Fiona in The Calling, while not necessarily spunky, she is much more lively and much more animated. She is also, I feel like, feisty in The Calling. She constantly gives Merrick crap for pretty much everything. And she has a lot of emotions. Like, she gets angry, she gets irritated, but she also falls in love. And she also, you know, one of their party member dies and she's distraught. She's very upset over it. And so we see her experiencing the range of emotions, specifically in The Calling. And I feel like by the time we get to Asunder, she's so much more muted, and maybe withdrawn too. And I think that you absolutely can interpret that as maybe potentially dissociative identity disorder. But at the same time, I hesitate to say, oh yeah, that's what this is, because at the same time, she has also continually experienced trauma upon trauma upon trauma of being expelled from the Grey Warden. Well, actually, let me go back. of unexpectedly being pregnant, having the child, being expelled from the Grey Wardens because of something you could not control, being forced to go back to the circles where, again, trauma upon trauma upon trauma, and then leading a war. Like, that's what she's doing. She's leading a war, becoming a slave to Tevinter, becoming a slave again. And then finally, like, getting into a safe place with the Inquisition, possibly. And so I just feel like all of those things are astronomic levels of trauma that could contribute to her personality changes as well, outside of any kind of like mental disorder that she may have.
And I will say that one of the biggest points in this theory that you could point at that would like throw a big wrench in that is that Fiona does not appear to be suffering any type of like memory gaps. And so like when you have dissociative identity disorder, like dissociative, like to disassociate, most of the time you do not remember the things that are done when the other personalities are taking over. So if this was a true onset and like there was a different personality, Fiona wouldn't even know Alistair necessarily exists. She wouldn't remember
those.
That's true.
That's true. But I mean, there are memory gaps at the beginning of Inquisition as a result, presumably, of the time magic. So there is some there, which is why for me, I didn't just disregard this theory entirely because, you know, it could be a both and kind of situation.
Yeah, I just thought it was an interesting kind of, we see so little kind of presentation of mental health or mental anything in these games. I thought it was an interesting kind of take there. And so I just wanted to bring it up just a little bit before we kind of wrap up in our quotes and stuff.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate that. So let's talk about some quotes. The first one that I have is from The Calling. And she says, "I'm so tired of pain. So tired. Aren't you?" And the reason I brought this is because, yes, she's experienced a lot of pain to this point in her life. But also, it's heartbreaking because she has so much more pain left to experience in her life. She hasn't gone back to the circles. She hasn't experienced the Inquisition or the Tevinter slavery mess. And it was just striking to me because it's like, yes, she had a horrible childhood and despicable things happened to her, but also her entire arc is pain. And then I brought another quote, a kind of lighthearted one, which is where she says, "Fuck the divine." And then she like thinks about it for a minute and she says, "I'm certain the divine is a perfectly nice person," after everyone looks at her aghast, which is just funny to me. And then we have another one. "If Alistair is king," she says, "I only wanted to know if he was happy. His father had such hopes for him." And so we also have a quote from Fiona, "If Alistair is the warden," that comes to Skyhold. She says, "The warden you brought to Skyhold, his name is Alistair." And the Inquisitor says, "Yes, didn't you meet him?" And she says, "No, there's no point in that now. He seems a good man." And the Inquisitor says, "Yes, he does." And she says, "It's not important. I'm simply musing on the clever tricks the Maker plays." So do you have thoughts about these quotes?
Well, I was saying, and like sticks out to me, especially from like the first two quotes to the last two, is there like there is such a vast difference that we could attribute to just age. I mean, these quotes are 30 years apart. Fiona would be around, I don't know the exact age, but 30 years has passed since she was a young adult-ish in The Calling, and now she has gone through a lot. So I think that I really like the quotes and how they portray, like, this, especially this conversation with the Inquisitor. Fiona kind of takes that thing of, like, I'm laughing at this because this is how life is. Like, these moments of, I thought I gave up this child, and here he is again, like within me, but I didn't take that opportunity to go and meet him.
Yeah, I think it's sad that she doesn't go and meet him. And I assumed that she probably doesn't feel like his mother. And I mean, she is biologically, but she was never present in his life. And so I assume that there is some kind of maybe shame or guilt, but probably also distance, just some uncomfortability with the distance. And so I assume that that's why she doesn't go and speak to him. And she also probably assumes like, oh, he's made a good name for himself. He doesn't need me, especially if he's a warden. She probably thinks he doesn't need my stained reputation staining his reputation, seeing as how she got kicked out, regardless of whether or not that that's true, because I do believe that Alistair would want to meet his mother based on his comments and actions and origins. But Fiona doesn't know that.
Right. And like one of the things about this, and like this is what, when we talk about like nuance in Dragon Age, we talk about this because you can read this interchange and you can hear like, you could almost interpret this and see this as like feeling Fiona's grief for the life she could have had. Like the life that would have been hers if under different circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I definitely think that there's a lot of that that goes on with her story, just because it's natural to kind of look back and reflect when you're presented with like the physical reality of your past, you know? And I can't help but wonder if Fiona wonders about what it would have been like if she had made different choices to parent Alistair or to stay and be in his life and be around Merrick, you know? Who knows? We surely don't. So I'm kind of doing a new thing. I want to bring in some personality characteristics, like things that really make this character unique. And so some characteristics of Fiona that I think are very evident across all the books and the games that she appears in. So I think extreme pragmatism we very much see, especially in Inquisition, where she's always like thinking of this is the best course of action, and in Asunder too. I also think we see a lot of courage and bravery in her. She pretty much is always faced with a really hard decision. And she, I don't think she ever takes the easy way out. And I think some people probably do argue that she does take the easy way out in aligning with Tevinter. But you have to remember that the time magic is really messing with them. And they are not like, they're not equipped to see all angles, all sides of their position, because Alexius is deliberately manipulating that. And so regardless, mm-hmm. I do think she's very courageous. And I do think we also see glimpses of sincere and intense vulnerability from time to time, like these conversations that she has with the Inquisitor about her son. That takes a lot of sincere vulnerability. You don't just open up to somebody you met 2 days ago about your long-lost son from 30 years ago. Like, you just don't do that unless you're okay with being vulnerable. And then lastly, I think that Fiona's story is one of endurance. She has experienced so much pain and hardship and unfairness and injustice and abuse in her life. And somehow she's managed to survive, you know, 50 plus years. And it's very honorable, very impressive that she is able to make a life for herself despite all the shitty things that life has thrown at her.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I think that along with like this being like being courageous and endurance, but like this really falls into, I think we don't get this a lot in Inquisition just on what we see, but like Fiona is very noble. And I say that in a sense of she's always trying to do what she thinks is right. It might not be like what you think as like lawful good, right? But she's always trying to accomplish what she believes is right. She believes mage freedom is right for the world. And so she campaigns and she fights for that. And, you know, she doesn't want to resort to violence. And like, as we talked about, she wants the war to end. She wants a peaceful solution. She doesn't want the violence and chaos that is going to be, you know, sown from a Mage Templar war. But at the same time, I think she weighs those things of saying, like, okay, we might have to weigh this, like, yeah, there's going to be violence, but we could either have, you know, a decade worth of violence or continue for another age of mage oppression.
Yeah, I definitely hear that. So let's get into why we like, love, hate, dislike Fiona. Do you want to go first? Do you have an answer or do you want to hear mine first?
I'll go first and you can come back after that. I am still kind of like, I don't hate Fiona. I never hated her to begin with. I was just a little like, oh, she's there. She's the person you get with the mages. Like, that's where she is. But I think that with a lot of characters sometimes, especially in Inquisition, like, we don't really grasp the importance of who they are if you haven't read the extra, like, the out of game material. If you haven't engaged in that material, you don't really know who these characters are and their story and the significance. And just like, and like, it affects how you make decisions of the game. For example, like, another example of this is, you know, the Masked Empire very much will affect how you decide Wicked Eyes, Wicked Hearts. And I think it's similar. Like, once you learn who Fiona is, it makes knowing Fiona and knowing who she is and learning her story makes me, it now makes me feel like less like the fate of her being a slave again to the Venatori is heartbreaking to me. Which is what would happen if you side with the Templars. And I kind of hate that. But again, like, from the same thing, like with Cerberus, like, I hate what happens to him if you side with the mages. Like, but Bioware did that intentionally. And so.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, no matter what you choose, there is a tragedy somewhere. And that's war, you know? So I don't hate it. But I do, it makes, knowing Fiona's backstory makes it so much harder to make that choice. And I do wish that they had made it more explicit and easy to find in game. Because I just don't feel like she's done justice in Inquisition. I feel like she is just a blank slate for the player to, like, be frustrated at. Like, we're not given enough information about why she's making the decisions she's made. We're not given enough information about why she's allied with Tevinter or taken up residence in Redcliffe. Like, we're just not given nearly enough information to make the story impactful. And so for me, I like Fiona. I love her, even especially in The Calling. And it's so frustrating to me because the thing I complain about all the time with Dragon Age, especially the books, is that, like, we constantly have examples of women who sacrifice themselves and die, or become mothers and just decide to not be, you know, a major player in the game anymore. Rowan, example, or Catriel, example. However, with Fiona, we have something different where she becomes a mother and she still is able to affect so much change in Thedas. But at the same time, it feels like they're telling us you have to give up everything if you want to do that. You can't be a mom and have a life. You can't be a mom and change the world. You have to pick one or the other. You can be a Rowan where you just sit idly by and raise your kids and die of sadness like Padme. Or you can be like Fiona, who gives up her children and changes the world. Or you can be like Catriel and all of the other people in the series, the Kuzlin mother or the City Elf mother or so many others, that you just have to die and sacrifice yourself and that's it. So for me, it's frustrating. I love Fiona. I just want more for her story.
I think I really do agree with that assessment as well. All right. Well, do you have anything else to add here?
Not unless you have any further comments. I think we can wrap it up.
All right. Well, thanks for bringing the research and doing all the work and bringing us an interesting character to talk about. I'm excited to read more of The Calling and to talk more about the books coming up later in a future season. But thank you. And thank you all for listening to the Dragon Age Lorecast. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening to the Dragon Age Lorecast. You can find us on Twitter at DALorecast.
If you have any lore questions, topics to unpack, or side character suggestions, join our Cups Podcasting and More Discord server. It's easily the best place on the internet. You can also support us financially through our Patreon. You can find us there on patreon.com/DragonAgeLorecast.
The Dragon Age Lorecast is part of the Robots Radio Network. For more information about the Robots Radio Network, join the Discord server via the link in our episode description.
If you enjoyed the show or learned something new today, please subscribe, leave us a review, and join the Patreon. And if you enjoyed our intro and outro music, give a big thank you to Pipe Man Studios. Thank you, Pipe Man. Thanks again for listening to the Dragon Age Lorecast. We'll see you next time. Do you love Dragon Age? Have you always wanted to learn more about its vast world and detailed lore? Are you still attached to your hero of Ferelden, even a decade after Dragon Age Origins came out? Or maybe you're a newer fan, still discovering a new tidbit or quest every day.
Well, either way, the Dragon Age Lorecast is the podcast for you. I'm Austin, also known as Teacup.
And I'm Shelby, also known as SheCup.
And come and join us as we embark on a journey to explore and discover all things Dragon Age.
We'll discuss all kinds of topics, from Lyrium to the Chantry and the great mysteries of the old gods, and even more that even you BioWare superfans might not know about.
So come and listen on Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. And always remember,
swooping.